Okay,
Hello,
Francis, over to you. Everybody's here.
everyone. So, welcome. We missed last month, but we're back to it. We had to delay this month a week because last Sunday was the last day of the conference, but I didn't want to miss this month altogether. So we rescheduled, and I'm glad you all were able to find the link a week late. And we'll be back on normal third Sunday from here on, even though there's always occasional exceptions. Okay, so as you all know, this webinar series is available on Macara under webinar series in progress, and all episodes of this, the Secret Teachings of All Ages, and the TCF series are also available on YouTube. Just do a search for the webinar series you'd like to view. You can also access any of these webinars up in the left upper corner of the MoriaFederation.com webpage. Okay, this month in old diary leaves, Colonel Olcott describes an encounter with a kind of a fake yogi. Can we get a reader, please? This isn't him, by the way. This is just a picture of an Indian yogi.
Okay, I'll go ahead and start. A queer creature of a Hatha yogi who leaped about like a kangaroo and made himself otherwise ridiculous walked 12 miles to see me on 2nd March. He said he had clairvoyantly seen me at a certain temple the night before, and his goddess had ordered him to pay me a visit for his spiritual. The only phenomenon which he exhibited was to make fall from the air a number of limes, which he presented to me. I can't say how much the visit profited him, but certainly it did not seem to have much effect on me beyond making me realize once more how foolish it was for men to undergo so long and severe a training to so little purpose. He gets a certain small amount of wonder working power, not a hundredth part of HPB's, some thought reading power, some troublesome elementals dangling about him, and that is all. He violated the good old rule not to prophesy unless you know by predicting to Mr. Hart and Ananda,
I'm not done.
whom I sent to see him the next day, that within 6 years I should certainly be able to perform great miracles.
Okay, and next page.
Barbara, can you read that for us, please?
Yes, the same yogi paid a second visit to headquarters on the 9th and did some phenomena in the portrait room of the library. An orange, some limes, and 25 rupees in money were apparently showered about us, and my gold pen was transported from my writing table upstairs to the picture room. A plate of broken stones and pottery was also converted into biscuits. But the affair smelt of trickery, as the man insisted on being left alone to do bhakti puja before we were admitted, and his movements were not at all satisfactory. The money I gave back to him, as I felt that it had been lent him for the trick by one of the persons who accompanied him.
Thank you, Barbara. So it's interesting. Here's, in Colonel Olcott, we have a man who's used to the extraordinary abilities of HPB to manifest all types of various things. If you've been doing this series for a while, you may remember some of the manifestations that she pulled off. Like I remember one where she had all her guests seated around a long table, and then she had their favorite flower fall from the ceiling onto their plate, right? And one man was from Scotland, and a piece of heather fell onto his plane. This is in the middle of hot India. So you compare that to, turning pottery shards into biscuits. It's kind of funny. Anyway, okay, we began our last session by taking a look at the three levels of reality described in the Book of Numbers, where it is explained that En or En, also called Ayin, you see it here in the middle, and Ior, Aior, is the self-existent, self-born reality, whereas its depth, Bythos or Bouthon of the Gnostics, also called Propator, is, even though unmanifest, nonetheless only periodical. Propator is similar to the Gnostic Ein Sof, which you see here, Ein Sof Aur, I mean, which links the self-existent with the articulated stages shown in the tree of life. So it's basically levels of the unmanifest and then the particular qualities of the manifest, which only occur during cyclic manifestation, right? Pretty much this whole section and of the SD describes the various levels of manifestation, and has she's been doing this now for a while. We've been getting it through the Tree of Life. HPB then tells us, quote, "As in the Japanese system, in the Egyptian, and every old cosmogony, at this divine flame, the one are lit, the three descending groups, having their potential being in their higher group. They now become distinct and separate entities. These are called the virgins of life, the great illusion, etc., and collectively the six-pointed star." This led to a discussion of the Japanese and the Egyptian systems, which hold elements of HBB philosophy, but lack, at least in versions that I could put my hands on, teachings on the source of these three descending groups, which HPB calls the one divine flame. We then took a look at the significance of the six-pointed star in both Hinduism, where it is associated with Vishnu, and as it used to be in the Kabbalah, where it is seen to be an expression of the Tetragrammaton and the Tao cross. HPB then describes the four letters of the Tetragrammaton, the Yod, shown here, the He, the first He, the Vav, and the second He, and their association with both the six-pointed star and the Tree of Life. You'll notice that each of these letters has to do with a particular sephiroth of the Tree of Life, or it's an expression of that. HBB, we then learned that, quote, "The six-pointed star refers to the six forces or powers of union, or powers of nature, sorry, the six planes, principles, etc., all synthesized by the seventh or the central point in the star." So six is universally the number of manifestation. The six emanate from the one, and together with this higher one form the seven, which are collectively the one or unity. This is perfectly symbolized by the six-pointed star, which demonstrates both as unity and as sixfold. So, we're used to seeing these chart of the planes stacked one on top of each other. But DK tells us in Treatise on Cosmic Fire, he actually tells us that it's more like a sphere, a rotating sphere, and that the sphere of the rays It, that sphere of the six planes rotates horizontally, whereas the sphere of the rays is, which is it is overlaid directly in the occupies the same space, rotates vertically. Thus, you have every possible combination of plane, subplane, and ray type. This is very, very different way of experiencing or seeing, understanding the planes than this vertical. So the six-pointed star gives us another way of looking at any unity expressing itself in a sixfold way. Okay. The six from one also demonstrates to the seven manifested creative hierarchies. The source, represented by the point in the center of the six-pointed star, is called Daivi Prakriti, Daivi Prakriti, the light of the unmanifested logos. That would be the higher darkness from which all light comes. But in its differentiation, we're told it becomes Vohat, or the seven suns. Daivi Prakriti doesn't actually become Vohat, but rather provides the substantive aspect on which Vohat works. We then took a look at how an old commentary relates to the Sephira of the Tree of Life. Quote, the first, see here, we're just going to go through these comments that are indicated in the old commentary. The first after the one is divine fire. That's represents Chokmah. The second, fire and ether, that represents Bina. The third is composed of fire, ether, and water. That represents Kesed. The one is not concerned with the. Oh, that's here. Oh, I'm sorry. Let's see. Let me get this right. The fourth of fire, ether, and water. That's Kesed is the third. It's composed of fire, ether, and water. Notice that it's not the third in line because Kether is not. Is the unity of all these. It's the one of the one and ten. So the third is actually Kesed, and the fourth is made of fire, ether, water, and air, and that's the Tifereth, Sephiroth. The one is not concerned with the man-bearing globes, but with the inner invisible spheres, and that seems to reference Kether. The firstborn, back up to Kokhmah, not Chokhmah like it sounds, but or is written, but it's actually pronounced Kokhmah, are the life, the heart, and pulse of the universe. The second are its mind or consciousness. And that pretty much takes us up to where we left off last time. Next up, we come to the C section of HPB's commentary on verse 1 of stanza 7, which references that phrase in the verse that reads, the one from the mother spirit, Atman, then the spiritual, Atma, Buddhi, spirit, soul. So this verse is going to just descend through all the phases of becoming, and she takes each phase in and of itself. So could we get a reader, please, for this C section?
Joe, can you read that for us, please?
Here, yes. See, the second order of celestial beings, those of fire and ether, corresponding to spirit and soul, or the Atma Buddhi, whose names are legion, are still formless, but more definitely substantial. They are the first differentiation in the secondary evolution or creation, a misleading word. As the name shows, they are the prototypes of the incarnating jivas or monads and are composed of the fiery spirit of life. It is through these that passes like a pure solar beam, the ray which is furnished by them with its future vehicle, the divine soul, Buddhi. These are directly concerned with the hosts of the higher world of our system. From these twofold units emanate the threefold. In the cosmogony of Japan, when out of the chaotic mass an egg-like nucleus appears, having within itself the germ and potency of all the universal, as well as of all terrestrial life, it is the threefold just named which differentiates the male ethereal, yo, principle ascends, and the female grosser or more material principle, jin, is that right? Yin, is precipitated into the universe of substance when a separation occurs between the celestial and the terrestrial.
Sorry, I was muted. Thank you, Joe. We will understand this piece by piece. Okay, so first, the second order of celestial beings, those of fire and ether, corresponding to spirit and soul, or the Atma Buddhi, whose names are legion, are still formless, but more definitely substantial. So up to this point, we've been discussing the first order of being described in verse one as the divine vehicle of sentient formless life. This first order is associated with the yod, fire, the chokma or kokma, Sephiroth, divine monarch of the central heaven in the Japanese triad, and Amun Ra among the Egyptians. It's important to keep in mind that this first order is still a vehicle for the life aspect. Thus, it stands in the position on the tree of life as kokma rather than up in the undifferentiated kether stage or the ayin and ayin sof stages. Since HPB will now be presenting each of the seven orders of celestial beings, known in the blue books as the seven creative hierarchies, or at least there's a close association, we'll take a look at a parallel description from from Bailey's Esoteric Astrology for each hierarchy in order to get a better idea of what each of these quote unquote celestial orders are. So first of all, we're backing up just a bit here to recap the first order, which is related to the first hierarchy. Now, if you're looking for a precise correlation between the different systems, you're not going to find it because the emphasis is different in, for instance, the way the Japanese describe these high beings or that the Kabbalah describes these high beings. So you can't, sometimes the parallel keywords just aren't there. But loosely speaking, you do have a correspondence. So could we get a reader, please, for this description of the first creative hierarchy?
Yes, Ariane has a question, so I'm going to ask her to ask her question and then read.
Okay, Ariane.
Hi. That figure of, you said Hathor, the falcon-headed figure in the Egyptian, is that the moon over his head or is that the sun? What is that?
Well, that would be like the You could cosmic call it in theosophy, it would be like the cosmic sun or the central spiritual sun.
But what about over his own head?
That would be these visible sun. But the link between shows that he as and this is where the uraeus comes in. The uraeus is like a bridge, and it shows the connection between the higher realms and the physical realm. So this would be the God in this solar system, who is a personification of the sun.
And I thought I misunderstood. I thought you said that this stele or whatever this painting is related to the moon. Did I?
No, Amun-Ra. It's the name of this being. That's Amun Ra. Amun Ra is the name of this being, not moon.
I see. I
Yeah.
see.
Okay. That
Yeah.
shows you're listening. Thank you for that.
Oh, yeah. Oh my.
Okay. So could you read, please?
Yes. Hierarchy one. The first great hierarchy is emanated from the heart of the central spiritual sun. It is the son of God himself, the firstborn in a cosmic sense, even as the Christ was the quote, eldest in a vast family of brothers, unquote, and the quote, first flower on the human plant, unquote. The symbol of this hierarchy is the golden lotus with its 12 petals folded. This first, sixth hierarchy has for its type of energy the first aspect of the sixth type of cosmic electricity and wields special power, therefore, in conjunction with the lowest fire, or, quote, fire by friction, unquote, as it makes itself felt on the sixth plane. These lives are called, quote, the burning suns of desire, unquote, and were the sons of necessity. It is said of them in the old commentary, quote, they burned to know. They rushed into the spheres. They are the longing of the father for the mother. Hence do they suffer, burn, and long through the sixth sphere of sense, unquote.
Thank you, Ariane. Any questions about this passage? Very esoteric, you know, and when he's talking about things like the sixth type of cosmic electricity. Yeah, and what he says here that this form of cosmic electricity wields special power in conjunction with the lowest fire or fire ray friction on the sixth plane. That suggests literally the astral plane of our cosmic physical plane. This is all has to do with the desire to be, which is the expression of this particular hierarchy. Okay, in this C section, HPB introduces the second order, described in the verse as the one from the mother spirit, Atman, then the spiritual, Atma Buddhi, spirit, soul. So in the second order, the ether of Mina is added to the fire of Kokma. This is a downward Atma Buddhi extension from the monadic plane. The number of beings at this level, HPB here tells us, is legion. but they still have their existence in the formless realms of the cosmic physical ethers. Next. They are the first differentiation in the second evolution or creation, a misleading word. As the name shows, they are the prototypes of the incarnating jivas or monads and are composed of the fiery spirit of life. So we have to keep in mind that, unlike in this in second generation theosophy of Alice Bailey, in HPB's first generation theosophy, the monad is a generic unit, meaning simply an indivisible unit, as shown in this chart, which illustrates six levels of monads from the divine, from the divine to the astral physical monad on the lower plane. So in the phrase prototypes of the incarnating jivas or monads, we are looking at units called here monads on the atmic and buddhi planes of the spiritual triad, which are indeed prototypes of the incarnating jivas, whose incarnations occur in the lower quaternary. Thoughts or questions about this? Yeah, you have to keep your terminology straight when you're comparing the two systems, two generations of theosophy. Okay, next. It is through these that passes, like a pure solar beam, the ray which is furnished by them with its future vehicle, the divine soul, Buddhi. These are directly concerned with the hosts of the higher world of our system. From these twofold units emanate the threefold. So the quote-unquote ray, like a pure solar beam, is imbued with the will to be of the solar logos. Also, by extension in the microcosm of the monad. When touched by this ray, the divine and spiritual monads create prototypes for what will become the monastic or higher human monad, called here the divine soul or Buddhi. The quote, hosts of the higher worlds are those devic beings under the rule of the lords of the Atmic and Buddhic planes. From these twofold units emanate the threefold, means Atma Buddhi becomes Atma Buddhi Manas, the threefold higher human ego. In DK Theosophy, Atma Buddhi Manas is the source of soul, and it's the vehicle of what is called the monad on its own plane. Next, in the cosmogony of Japan, when out of the chaotic mass an egg-like nucleus appears, having within itself the germ and potency of all the universal as well as of all terrestrial life. It is the threefold just named, which differentiates. So ancient Japanese mythology does indeed describe a cosmic egg called the, quote, originating heart of the universe, emerging from chaos, which holds in potential the three gods that we earlier studied, and which HPB here tells us personify Atma Buddhi Manas. Next, the male ethereal, yo, principle, ascends, and the female grosser or more material principle, in, is precipitated into the universe of substance when a separation occurs between the celestial and the terrestrial. So the two principles, yo and in, are personified by Izanagi and Izanami, who meet on the bridge between the celestial and terrestrial worlds. Could we get a reader for this description of these two?
Ben, can you read that for us, please?
Izanagi, male ethereal principle, Yo. Izanagi is the male deity associated with the sky, heavens, and the divine realm. He represents the active, creative force and the initiator of the processes of creation. Izanagi is often depicted as the divine progenitor, who, along with Izanami, gave birth to the islands of Japan and various deities. Izanami, female grosser principle, in. Izanami is the female deity associated with the earth, the material realm, and the physical aspects of creation. She embodies the receptive, nurturing force and the manifestation of the creator potential initiated by Izanagi. Izanami is often depicted as the mother of the islands and the numerous deities, emphasizing her role in bringing forth life and substance. Together, Izanagi and Izanami symbolize the dynamic interplay between the ethereal, Yo, and the material, Yin, principles, highlighting the balance and harmony necessary for creation and the sustenance of the universe.
Thank you, Ben. So you can see this also as a kind of cosmic version of the Antikarana. It's the place where the where spirit and matter meet. Purified matter crosses to a certain point on the bridge and is met by the spirit aspect. Okay, any thoughts or questions? Right. I see.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, please, Barbara.
It's interesting that the Japanese system of the oval corresponds with the scientific view of the background radiation field is the first formation out of chaos. Also interesting that in several systems that the feminine, feminine part of the Trinity brings forth creation. It isn't the combination of the two, it's just the female lineage. So I'm wondering what lower Bodhi, what lower and higher Bodhi, how would we differentiate those two and where would lower Bodhi be on this on the system of manifestation?
Well, the entire Buddhic plane is cosmic etheric, and so it is, you could say, it is the first plane of the current solar system's expression. In other words, you move into, speaking spiritually, you move into the field of life when you enter the Buddhic plane. This happens once and for all at the fourth initiation, where you leave behind the realm of death through incarnation and you enter the Buddhic realm. The higher subplanes of the Buddhic are directly connected to the cosmic levels of being, as well as to the higher etheric counterparts, the udi, the monadic, and the atmic plane would have their direct subplane correspondences in the buddhic, right? Whereas the lower buddhic would be source levels for manifestation through the mental, astral, and physical planes, though vibrationally set apart from them. So you would have that as at least one of the distinctions that would come about. You know, the new fourth initiate, the work is to incorporate the higher buddhic subplane principles. And that's the work that's done in order to bridge the gap between the fourth and fifth initiations. Anyone else? Okay.
Joe?
Wondered if we could take a look again at the Egyptian depiction, I think it was.
Of Amun-Ra? You mean the sun god, Amun-Ra?
I'm not sure. The one I'm thinking about, it shows the feminine as having a flame coming out of her head.
Well, I think the only Egyptian we've done so far, let's see, where am I? Number 68 is here. Is that the one?
Yeah, there it is.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, it says, my sense of it's a picture is worth a thousand words.
Right. And, you know, this is that duality expressed as the, you know, adoring feminine substantive world. That is, this is the aligned lower vehicles. And that alignment is shown through this adoration. Glad you brought that up. I hadn't really thought about it. Right. Okay, so get back here, 69.
Ben says she has a perfume cone on her head.
A perfume what?
Cone, with a pine cone.
Oh, yeah, I'm forgetting the meaning of that cone. It has a very particular meaning, but that escapes me right now. Yeah, I see Joe's hand.
Joe, is your hand back up again? You have another question, or I lowered it for you. Did you?
Comment, I think it's pineal, what you just referred to.
Oh, the pine cone is the pineal?
Yes.
That was convenient. I can't say for sure. Maybe, you know, somebody could do an AI question or something on the side and get back to us. But okay, until then, let's go ahead. So from this female, the mother, the first rudimentary objective being is born. It is ethereal, without form or sex. And yet, it is from this and the mother that the seven divine spirits are born, from whom will emanate the seven creations. Just as in the Codex Nazareus from Karabtanos and the Mother Spiritus, the seven, I went ahead, didn't I? Okay, I was reading the long version here. We'll just stop at are born from whom will emanate the seven creations. So the mother is the second order, right? That's this kokma, called in the verse mother spirit, Atman, who births Atma Buddhi, the spirit soul. Called here the first rudimentary objective being. From these two, the first septenary, called here the seven divine spirits are born. So the seven from the three is a common theme in, you know, all esoterica. The quote unquote seven creations are listed in the 8th century AD Japanese Kojiki, which means records of ancient matters. Before we go on, let's grab Nadal's question.
Okay, I want to tell you, I looked it up and it means enlightenment, spiritual awakening, the third eye, and yes, Joe, the pineal gland.
Yay, I'll never forget it again. The cone means, pineal, good to know. Okay.
And then Joe just put a link in there on that too. So, okay, go ahead, please, Nadal.
Just go back one slide where it says, from this, the female, the mother, and then without form or sex. It just struck me how much we need a new language, that how we're talking about a female and yet at the same time sexless. So
it's the language barrier, isn't it? So the female concerns is, you could just replace the word female with form-based. Mm-hmm. Right? So we're talking about the etheric levels, and therefore it is inherently form-based.
I get it. It's just that I can easily see how someone looking at this can say, what?
Just throw up their hands. Yeah. It's one of those weird circular things where you have to know a certain amount to understand what's being said. And yet this is the book that you learn in order to know about it in the first place. That's why I think reflecting back on the secret doctrine with a basis in a Dual Cool theosophy really helps understand this material much better. Thanks for noticing that. Okay. So the Kojiki, I like, you know, the thing you don't get with DK is the cultural parallels and significances, you know, like this, how the seven, which emanate from the three, ultimately through the mother, or third aspect, what this looks like in the Japanese culture. So, being obviously exoteric and symbolic, these are, we're not going to read them, creation of heaven and earth, separation of the heavenly and earthly energies, emergence of the first deities, birth of Izanagi and Izanami, creation of the islands of Japan. Interesting, isn't it? Very Japanese centric there. Birth of additional deities and the separation of the sun and moon. So let's take a look at an excerpt from DK's description of the second creative hierarchy, which is the source of these seven. Can we get a reader?
Okay, hold on just 1 minute. Ariane says, is our planet female or just a material stage or something else?
It depends on your perspective. In relation to its alter ego, Venus, it is considered to be in a male incarnation, with the Venus as the female incarnation. That might have something to do with the mythology of Venus. But if you're talking about the substantive aspect of the cosmic physical plane, which is what our planet demonstrates through, all of that could be seen as anima mundi, which is a female aspect. So it's all perspective. It's always the relationship that creates the gender. Okay. Can we get a reader, please? So also, yeah, continue.
Chris.
That's where the Mother Earth aspect comes in, which is that it's the, you know, it's the great nourishing agency that allows life to come forth. The Gaia theory is based on that physical mother aspect. Okay. And BL, I guess you're keeping a handle on the chats, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to. Chris, I asked you if you'd read, but maybe I should ask somebody else. There you go.
Hierarchy, the second hierarchy, is closely allied with the Great Bear. We're told that they entered through the second ventricle within the Sacred Heart and are, as we are told in the Secret Doctrine, the prototypes of the monads. They are the source of monadic life, but they are not the monads. They are far higher. This hierarchy, which is literally the seventh in the influx into our system of those lives who in the first solar system remained on their own plane, being too sinless and holy to find opportunity in that very material and intellectual evolution. Even in this, they will find it impossible to do more than influence the incarnating jivas, imparting to them ability to realize the nature of group consciousness, the quality of the seven heavenly men, but not being able to express themselves fully. Some clues to this mystery will come if the student carefully bears in mind that in our solar system and our seven planes, we have only the physical body of the Logos, and that physical body is a limitation of the expression of his threefold nature. The first, sixth, hierarchy might be viewed as endeavoring to express the mental vibration of the solar Logos, and the second, his emotional or cosmic astral nature, it is the energy of this hierarchy which results in the manifestation of the divine androgen and in the seven centers of force, which are the seven spiritual energies. Whew.
Yeah, that's quite a read, isn't it? Thanks for that. So, you know, there's some inherent difficulties in understanding, you know, aspects of this material. Like, for instance, he says they are the source of monadic life, but they are not the monads. They are far, far higher. Yet, you know, because these are manifested creative hierarchies, they are by definition expressing in the seven subplanes of the cosmic physical plane, right? So if they are quote unquote far higher than the monads, it would seem that they would have to be, that they would have to have their lives at a higher level than the monadic plane where monads have their existence, right? So, you know, you have these kind of inherent problems in terms of trying to relate what DK says about these hierarchies directly with the subplanes. Yeah, I've never gotten a satisfactory answer to that. I mean, it fits that this first hierarchy, where is it here? Oh, it's way back. Never mind. That the first hierarchy is the one here. We could be expressive of the Udi plane, of the cosmic physical plane. I mean, it just lines up by number, first plane, first of seven hierarchies, right? And you know, the fact that they're called divine planes, but that's also called the undifferentiated sea of fire, whereas these are articulated lives. So, you know, there's just inherent difficulty trying to relate the two. The energy is called supreme energy or parashakti, which also could be a definition of the of that sea of fire. But it expresses mental, the mental vibration. So it would have an association with a mental plane. So, you know, all you can do is try to build a series of associations, but it doesn't work out perfectly. I'm sure to DK it works out perfectly, but it certainly doesn't to his students. Okay, so next up, just as in the Codex Nazareus from Karabtanos and the Mother Spiritus, the seven evilly disposed material spirits are born. Okay, some of you may remember the Codex Nazareus is a Gnostic doctrine on the creation of the world. We looked at some of the teachings during the 77th Secret Doctrine webinar, this being the 89th, so about a year ago. The seven evilly disposed material spirits are the spirits of darkness, chaos, deception, destruction, fear, hatred, and lust. It sounds like the heads of the Hydra in Scorpio. Next, it would be too long to give here the Japanese names, but once translated, they stand in this order. One, the invisible celibate, which is the creative logos of the non-creating father, or the creative potentiality of the latter made manifest. So he's celibate because he's not directly involved in the creative aspect. That's similar to the Kether level, that first Sephiroth. This being's name is Kuni no Tokotachi. He embodies the eternal principles and represents the unchanging nature of the divine order. Next, the spirit or the god of the rayless depths of chaos, which become differentiated in matter or the world stuff, also the mineral realm. I'm not sure where that last comes from. This is Kureo Kami no Kami, a dragon deity associated with rain, snow, and the depths of the sea. Kureo Kami means dark dragon, or a dark dragon god, or god of the dark waters. Esoterically, these dark waters are the chaos that precedes existence. So at the highest level, you have the creative logos that stands above and beyond, very much like the Ein Sof levels in the Kabbalah. And whereas here you have a descent into chaos, but it is still undifferentiated. You know, such things as associated with rain, snow, and the depths of the sea are the, of course, the exoteric mythology, Japanese mythology. Esoterically, these dark waters are the chaos that precedes existence. Next, we have the spirit of the vegetable kingdom, of the quote unquote abundant vegetation. This goddess is named Konohana Sako Yahime, which means princess who makes the trees blossom, reflecting her association with nature and growth. So she's the spirit of this growth within the outer forms. She's particularly celebrated for her role in ensuring the fertility of the land and the abundance of crops. She's often depicted as a beautiful young woman surrounded by blooming cherry blossoms, symbolizing the fleeting yet beautiful nature of life. Next, four. This one is of dual nature, being at the same time the spirit of the earth and the spirit of the sands, the former containing the potentiality of the male element, the latter that of the female element, the two forming a combined nature. This god's name is Okuninushi, a god of medicine, farming, and business, and is revered for his role in shaping the land and its resources. Though by number, these last two gods would be associated with the third and fourth hierarchies, the exoteric nature of the descriptions, which are the only descriptions I could find on these last two gods, makes it pretty much impossible to directly associate them with a particular hierarchy. I'm sure that in the esoteric teaching, you know, the Japanese mystery schools, you would have very different teachings about these levels. Okay, but I thought it was interesting, you know, just to, you know, look at these different levels. We can get some association. This, you know, the higher ones are the easiest to understand, you know, the source, God, celibate, standing above the clouds you see here. Yet with this will to be, the potential for all manifestation indicated by the down pointing sword. And then you have this dragon of chaos, where the whole manifested world at the higher levels is often called a chaos, because it's the beginning of the interaction of spirit and matter. And then you have this, I love this one, because it's the source energy of growth. You know, it's oriented here towards the plant kingdom, but if you wonder if it isn't actually the vital aspect in whatever form, you know, whether in the animal kingdom or the plant kingdom or even the human kingdom. And then finally, you move into descriptions that seem to have nothing to do with the hierarchies. Are, you know, yeah, you're hard pressed to find a connection between in these last two. I went past it. Yeah, in these last two. Okay, so now we go on to the fifth, sixth, and seventh levels. Can we get a reader, please?
Yes. First, I want to say that I did miss a chat when you and Ariane were talking about the planet female. Chris says, I'm thinking that female is referring to the electrical charge. So important to differentiate.
Yeah, the female always refers to the electrical charge, because it's the receptive, and that which receives is the form aspect. It receives the impulse from the spirit aspect, and is, you could say, that fecundity results in the birth of forms. Good point. Thank you.
Okay, and then Scott, please read for us.
These two were one, yet unconscious of being two. In this duality were contained A, the male, dark and muscular being, Isu no Gai no Kami, and B, Eku Gai no Kami, the female, fair and weaker or more delicate being. Then the fifth and sixth, spirits who were androgynous or dual sexed, and finally seven, the seventh spirit, the last emanated from the mother, appears as the first divine human form, distinctly male and female. It was the seventh creation, as in the Puranas, wherein man is the seventh creation of Brahma. These Sanagi Sanami descended into the universe by the celestial bridge, the Milky Way, and Sanagi, perceiving far below a chaotic mass of cloud and water, thrust his jeweled spear into the depths, and dry land appeared. When the two separated to explore Okokoro, the newly created island world, etc., etc., Amoy.
Thanks, Scott. Okay, so first, these two were one, yet unconscious of being. In this duality were contained A, the male, dark and muscular being, Iso no Gai no Kami, and B, Iku Gai no Kami, the female, fair and weaker or more delicate being. So these two refers to the dual spirit of the earth and spirit of the sands, if you remember. And for some reason, the earth is considered the male and the sands the female, maybe because of its mutability, this quality of mutation. It's an extraordinary idea that gods could be unconscious of their external dual nature, probably owing to their inherently synthetic or androgyne level of consciousness. I can find no references to the name Isu no Gai no Kami and Iku Gai no Kami, which, I mean, you know, I could have missed it. There could be some reference somewhere. I looked a lot, but I couldn't find anything. But it also reminds us that HPB had access to unwritten, unpublished esoteric materials, which were being revealed for the first time through publication of the secret doctrine. Next, fifth and sixth, you know, that's the levels of cosmic being or celestial being. Spirits who were androgynous or dual sex. So, were these fifth and sixth iterations of the seven divine spirits also unaware of their outer dual expression? Or were they aware of their androgyny? If the latter, then the fourth level's lack of awareness of its own duality might represent an inherent, though unconsciously higher level of being. It's real subtle stuff. It's all very much veiled, but it gives us some hints. And finally, we have the seventh spirit, the last emanated from the mother, appears as the first divine human form, distinctly male and female. It was the seventh creation, as in the Puranas, wherein man is the seventh creation of Brahma. This seems to confirm that beginning with the fourth spirit, there is a progressive descent into duality. You know, beginning with that unconscious awareness of its own duality and ending finally in this sexually separated pair that personifies the perfected human form. This has its parallels in the early root races. There you don't have so much a spiritual descent into matter as the gradual formation of the material aspect of the form aspect of humanity, because it goes through, it's not until the third root race that there is a final separation into male and female physicality, and that procreation happens as it is now known to happen, rather than in forms of projection. And at one point, they're described as the egg-born, which suggests an etherealized level of humanity. Like I say, this is very veiled material. As stated earlier, humanity was also the seventh creation in Hinduism. So let's, for fun, read these seven levels of the Purana. Can we get a reader, please?
Yeah. Sooner or later. Janet?
Seven creations in the Puranas. Matahata, or universal soul, the first creation, or the cosmic intelligence, Matahattva, and the universal soul are created. Tantramatras. The second creation involves the subtle element, the matras, that give rise to the senses and the basic building blocks of the universe. Bhutas. The third creation is the creation of the gross elements, bhutas, such as earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Antadrityaka, or
Vaikarika. Vaikarika.
Vaikarika. The fourth creation involves the creation of the sense organ and the mind, allowing beings to perceive and interact with the world. Triyakharohas. The fifth creation is the creation of the lower animals, beings that are instinct driven and lack higher consciousness. Urha Vasrosa. The fifth creation involves the creation of divine beings or celestial entities, often referred to as devas or gods. Arvag Rohas, man. The seventh creation is the creation of humans, known as Arvaksha Rohas. Humans are endowed with intellect and the ability to achieve higher consciousness and spiritual growth.
Thank you, Janet. Sorry to give you all those words. So, you know, you can see some correlation. For instance, the Mahatattva. Okay. First creation where the cosmic intelligence, that's very much like the first creative hierarchy, which brings forth the intelligence aspect, you know, through the sun and Uranus and Leo. Leo ruled. And you might be able to go through and find other associations with the hierarchies, though it's not going to be direct. You know, for instance, Arvak Srotas, it doesn't have a parallel with the lowest hierarchy, which is the breadbasket the substantive realm. But you can often see parallels, even though not exact or direct. Okay, let's see here now. Okay, finally, we have these, this continuing with the Japanese hierarchy. These Tsunagi Tsunami descended into the universe by the celestial bridge, the Milky Way, and Tsunagi, perceiving far below a chaotic mass of cloud and water, thrust his jeweled spear into the depths at dry land appeared. Then the two separated to explore Onokoro, the newly created island world, etc., etc., Amoye. So Tsunagi Tsunami are alternative names for Izanagi and Izanami, the primordial male and female deities in Japanese mythology tasked with creating the world. The celestial bridge is called Ame no Ukihashi, or floating bridge of heaven, which symbolically associated with the Milky Way was believed to be the seed field from which souls emerged. Izanagi then used his Ame no Nuboko, heavenly jeweled sphere, to stir the chaotic waters of primordial earth. According to the myth, when he lifted the spear, drops of water fell from its tip and formed the first island, Onogoroshima. So that's the some references to the Japanese mythology. Next up, we move in on to the D and E sections of the verse, which state again the three from the one, the four from the one. So she's just going right down the line, right? First, the divine vehicle, the one from the mother spirit, and then the spiritual Atma Buddhi, spiritual soul, that would be the second descent. And now he's going to cover the three and the four from the one. The three is quite brief. Anyway, could we get a reader, please?
Yes. Catherine, can you read that for us, please?
Such are the Japanese exoteric fables, the rind that conceals the kernel of the same one truth of the secret doctrine. Turning back to the esoteric explanations in every cosmogony, D, the third order corresponds to the Atma, Buddhi, Manas, spirit, soul, and intellect, and is called the triads. The fourth are substantial entities. This is the highest group among the rupas, atomic forms. It is the nursery of the human, conscious, spiritual souls. They are called the imperishable jivas and constitute, through the order below their own, the first group of this first septenary host, the great mystery of human conscious and intellectual being. For the latter are the field wherein lies concealed in its privation the germ that will fall into generation. That germ will become the spiritual potency in the physical cell that guides the development of the embryo, and which is the cause of the hereditary transmission of the faculties and all the inherent qualities in man.
Thank you, Catherine. Okay, first, such are the Japanese exoteric fables, the rind that conceals the kernel of the same one truth of the secret doctrine. Like the exoteric mythology of all ancient cultures, the purpose of these fables was to conceal for the unready, I should say conceal and entertain, because often these myths are quite entertaining, and reveal to those who could profit by their study. I'm sure that ancient Japanese masters would have used these teaching stories to reveal the higher mysteries to their students. Same mystery stories, but with a higher interpretation. Next, the D section. Turning back to the esoteric explanations in every cosmogony, D, the third order corresponds to the Atma Buddhi Manas, spirit, soul, and intellect, and is called the triads. So this statement mirrors the wording of the D section of the verse, which states, again, three from the one, meaning Atma Buddhi Manas. With this passage, HPB continues her listing of the orders of celestial beings. But first, a quick review. First order is the divine vehicle of sentient formless life associated with Atma, fire, Kokma, and the first creative hierarchy. The second order is Bina, the feminine counterpart of Kokma, associated with Atma Buddhi, fire and ether, and the second creative hierarchy called the divine builders. The third order descended in the described in the first as the three from the one is, we are now learning, associated with Atma Buddhi Manas, and thus with soul, spirit, and intellect. Its associated Sephiroth is Kesed, whose element is water, and the Libra-ruled third creative hierarchy called the Lesser Builders, the Triple Flowers, and the Triads. This water would be the water of life as poured forth in Aquarius, not the lower aspect of that element. Could we get a reader for this DK's description of the third hierarchy?
Kirsten, can you read that,
yes,
please?
Hierarchy three, the third creative hierarchy, or the eighth, is a peculiarly interesting one. They are called the triads, for they hold in themselves the potencies of triple evolution, mental, physical, and spiritual. These triads of life are inherently the three persons of the Trinity and the flower of the earlier system from a certain angle. From another angle, when studied as the flower of the earlier eight, they are the eightfold points awaiting opportunity to flame forth. They are the divas who are ready for service, which is to give to another hierarchy certain qualities which are lacking. This hierarchy is regarded as great donors of immortality, whilst themselves standing aloof from incarnation. Lords of sacrifice and love are they, but they cannot pass out of the logoic etheric body into the dense physical vehicle.
Okay, thank you, Kirsten. Just one correction, it's mental, psychical, and spiritual.
Okay.
I only correct you because it's an important change in the meaning of
that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very mysterious hierarchy. They actually stand above the human monads in terms of the consciousness of those beings who are in this hierarchy. And yet, like the human monads, they are called lords of sacrifice and love. Okay, any thoughts or questions? It's a very dense subject, but that's not unusual when we're talking about HPV. But I hope you get some sense of the descent, of the nature of the descent into from spirit to matter through these many different ways of looking at it, you know, whether it be the Kabbalah or the Japanese system, or, you know, very particular scientific language of DK. Zahant?
Yes. Please go ahead, Miguel.
Are these different hierarchies different life waves?
Different life waves, yes, but they are composed of actual beings of consciousness who hold the level of consciousness described by DK. So they're life waves that started in the previous solar system, and are continuing in this solar system. Four of them have been what DK calls liberated, which means in that previous hierarchy, solar system, they were able to move on to the cosmic astral plane, One of them stands, the fifth one, which is ruled by Cancer, stands at this intermediate place between the higher and the lower, and is on the verge of that liberation, which means it's on the verge of ascending into the cosmic astral. And then you have these seven hierarchies, which in the previous solar system weren't liberated, and therefore form the life aspect on seven levels of all manifestation in this solar system, right? We're most familiar with the lowest four, because they represent basically the human condition at each of its levels, from the cellular or atomic level at the lowest up to the monadic level. Okay, next we move into the commentary on the E section, called the Four from the One. Quote, "The fourth are substantial entities. This is the highest group among the rupas, atomic forms. It is the nursery of the human conscious spiritual souls. They are called the imperishable jivas and constitute, through the order below their own, the first group of the first septenary host, the great mystery of the human conscious and intellectual being." So we now move into consideration of the Scorpio-ruled highest hierarchy of the lower quaternary of hierarchies. This is the human hierarchy par excellence, because it is the realm of the human monads, also called the initiates, lords of sacrifice, lords of love, imperishable jivas, and lords of flame, the latter expressive of the element of fire, which is associated both with Tifereth and with Manas. The fourth kingdom in nature is the outer expression of this hierarchy. And I saw a hand go up.
Yes, Joe. Please go ahead.
Yes. Can we go back to the one that we just worked with? Francis, I'm absolutely fascinated with this description, which, I'll see if I can get to it. The eightfold points awaiting opportunity to flame forth. We're looking at seven units, but it refers to the fifth unit, which isn't even shown. And it gives me a whole different idea. Let's see if I can get this thing to get out of my way. Okay. It's from another angle. When studied as the flower of the earlier eight, they are the eightfold points awaiting opportunity to flame forth. They are the devas who are ready for service, which apparently goes back to the fifth unit above, the one right above it. And they are ready for service, which is to give to another hierarchy certain qualities which are lacking. That whole area that suggests that what preceded where we are today to bring us to this section is very valuable.
Yeah, well, first of all, the eight comes from its number eight. It's the eighth hierarchy. And so therefore they're the eightfold points. And the awaiting opportunity to flame forth, they're really the life source for, that triple life force, which demonstrates through the hierarchies that you could say that they overshadow the fourth hierarchy, which is the ninth from when you count the unmanifested hierarchies. Yeah, I find it to be, a really fascinating hierarchical group.
We're looking both forward and backward, and I guess at this point I'll study it further, but it seems to me that the creative hierarchy 5 is definitely related. And you are pointing out that the creative hierarchy 8 might be where the devas are. I see, that's just because I'm not questioning you, I'm questioning myself, but.
Right, right. Well, you know, he tells us here that they're devic. That doesn't mean that that's the only devic hierarchy involved. And it makes sense that the devic hierarchy would be juxtaposed to the human hierarchy, right? It's interesting that they're above, you know, this is like those, I would say they're great devic lords, you know, who work in conjunction with these, with human monads. You know, at the sixth initiation, these are the two beings who come into union, right, to create their hermaphrodite, you know, and you literally leave the human kingdom. Possibly what you do at that sixth initiation is progress. I never thought of this before, but maybe you progress into this this higher hierarchy. Who knows, right? I saw another hand.
Yes, Magda, before I ask you to unmute, I just want to say that she put a comment and a image. She says, the last hierarchy we just discussed corresponds to the lower triad of angelic being, archai, the archangels and angels from the top and so on. And then she put a diagram in there for, yeah, you just pulled it up. Okay, now let me unmute her.
Okay, I'll see if I can size this. Yeah, I can do it. So,
yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oops. Okay, hang on a second. Go ahead.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to size this while you're talking.
Yes, I believe that the third, there is an exact correspondence between the third, second, and the first hierarchy of Blavatsky with the three orders of angelic hierarchies in Christianic esotericism, which are angels, archangels, archai, the lower triad, the most close, the closer one to us humans, and then the middle one, which are dunamis, excusiae, and the third one. And then the upper triad, which is the first group that we're studying in theosophy, that correspond to the tronies, the seraphim, and the cherubim and the seraphims, which are the higher ones up there, right before the Ein Sof, our Ein Sof and Ein. So we see here the whole circle and the correspondences are perfect. And then we see that here where it says in pieces, humanity, it's us that are trying to strive as initiates to go up the ladder to the angels, which is the closest hierarchy to us. Yes, they are devas, they are angels, they are the individual angels, the protective of individuals. Then we have the archangels with our protective of folk, and then the archai, which are protective of time too. And then going up higher, which are very distant from us. They cannot contact us so easily up from the dunamis up.
Yeah, it's an engaging, fascinating study, this correlation. I appreciate your understanding of this. You know, it's challenging to look at each of the levels of the angels as they're given in Christianity, because there's so much veiling that goes on in the Christian dispensation and DK's hierarchies. But yeah, it's really interesting. Well, we're out of time, folks. Let me get back here. Yeah, here we go.
Francis?
Yeah.
I just want to say, in reference to what Magda just said, that Melvin Artley paired something that correlates exactly what she just said, the angelic hierarchies, to the canonical divisions. And let me see if I can copy it over so I can put it in the chat.
Yeah, that'd be great.
For everything. He did this in 2000 and,
okay.
2005. If we can find the...
Find that. So while she's looking and posting, are there any last thoughts or questions about this?
Well, I can't walk and chew bubblegum at the same time, so...
No, that's why I say you should just do that.
Which means I can't ask them to unmute.
Oh, yeah, don't worry about that. I can do that.
I can say that the next Treatise on Cosmic Fire is out of sync because everything is in May. It's 30 May, so it's coming right up. First of June is the next STOA.
Right. So we have this coming Friday, we have TCF, and then 2 days later, we're in June, and we'll have Secret Teachings of All Ages. Then after that, I think it drops back into line in terms of following the right dates, you know. Second and fourth Fridays for TCF, the third Sunday for Secret Doctrine, and the first Sunday for our Secret Teachings of All Ages. So you can always go to Mori Federation and check it out. Check out the calendar there. That's the best way to find it. Were you able to locate that?
Yeah, I just need to, I was able to extract the slide, and now I just need to figure out how to send it in the chat.
By the way, you all, you know, you can right click, for instance, on Magda's image, and you'll get an option to copy that slide and then paste it, you know, in within a program on your own computer, so you can lift any of these chat items, you know, whenever you want. So just so you know.
Oops, I sent it directly to her. I didn't send it to everyone. Let me try that again.
I do that all the time.
You just have to be smarter than the computer. And sometimes I'm not necessarily.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll give everybody a minute or two to download that. It's from an article that Melvin Artley did. And
cool. Thank you.
And he says that he's just theorizing. But it makes an awful lot of sense the way that he's done this. So.
Yeah, cool. I can't in this few seconds get this right.
Get smaller.
More or less see it there. Just keep in mind, always keep in mind your source, you know, so you want to read up on who wrote this, and, you know, just remember that the higher sources such as DK are not always matched in veracity and truth by some other sources, but it's, you know, it's fascinating to study other systems as well. Okay, y'all, time to pull the plug, and we will see you next time, which will be this Friday for TCF. Thanks for joining. We'll see you next time.
Oh.
What?
I actually have the source. Let me see if I can.
Put it in.
Yeah. I just have to get to everything is. There we go. It's a Word document.
There you go.
So there you go. Everybody should be able to download that because he explains it very well. So.
Okay. Awesome.
All right. Sorry that I took us over, but I hope it was well worth having the information available to you.
You could right click on this last chat and you'll get an option to download or copy. I would choose download in this case. Okay.
And all right, everybody.
We'll see you next time. Hope to see you Friday. Be well. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.